the P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
Hold up,
it's Pure Boys.
Yeah, I got two throats.
The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
Hold up,
it's Pure Boys.
Say what?
Ciao, Fudgebaggers. Welcome to Pure Boys Podcast. I'm Adam, and also Urine.
I'm Steve, and I have something to tell everyone out there. F*** you. I only joke. We're ready to have another podcast, and I'm happy to be here.
This guy is bringing the heat first thing in the morning. We're talking about one of my favorite movies, 2009's Julie and Julia, a Meryl Streep, Stanley Tucci tour de force. And also Amy Adams is in it.
And Amy Adams is, like, on top of Meryl Streep in the IMDb listings.
Well,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, first of all, her name is alphabetically first. Second of all, her name is alphabetically first in the name of the movie, Julie and Julia.
It's very true, but Meryl Streep really, like, shines throughout this film.
Yeah.
I guess we can't really get into it.
Well, I will say this. I love this movie. But I mostly just ignore the Julie stuff. This movie would have been a million times better if it was just a movie about Julia Childs starring Meryl Streep and Stanley Tucci. I feel like I would have enjoyed it much more and then not have to ignore half of it.
You gotta think of the time. This was early 2000s, New York. You gotta plug New York into everything during this time.
You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us. Yep. And that's what they did. Well, it's based on a true story, based on a true blog, and based on two true stories, I guess it says at the start here.
Going back to blogging culture and the early 2000s was very weird for me.
Yeah, it was like seeing them be on a Blogspot website made me go like, ooh, I hope nobody finds my old Blogspot websites. They're filled with trash.
And pranks. You like to have a blog prank every day.
Oh, yeah. It was always like, put a bucket of water over a door, but fill it full of nails. What are you going to do? Not prank your grandma? Go for it.
Fill it full of nets is what I used to do. I'd fill a bucket full of nets, and that's real fun.
Well, you're a fisherman. You're a man of the sea. A seaman, as they'd say.
That's what I'd yell out when the nets would come down. I'm a fisherman.
It's full of semen.
And then a chortle, ha ha ha.
Of course, ha 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 ha. Hey, before we get too far into semen talk, we need to do the Pure Boys prayer. So everyone, please put your hands together.
And let's very strongly.
Please. Push. Hurt your arms.
God bless our podcast. God bless all podcasts.
We love you.
Amen.
Amen or amen? Which way do you like it?
A, you say potato, I say potato.
Because there's no other way to say potato.
No, it's potato.
I feel like if someone says potato, it's only because they've heard that song. No one would look at the word and go, oh, potato. No, potato.
Well, nowadays.
Yeah.
Today in our Twitter culture and everything, everybody says potato, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, potato has gone the way of the dodo.
I don't want to bring it back. I don't have the, like, cojones to bring it back.
Oh, no, I do. Hashtag justice for potato, you know?
Yeah, but also don't bring it back. It's a weird, place to be.
Yeah, and also don't, like, speak that into your phone to get it to type it, because it's going to put justice for Paderno, and you don't want to get involved with any of that stuff.
Or Moderna.
Pumping us full of the
coffee.
Virus. The virus.
Mamma mia.
Oh, no. Oh, man. I just, I'm so excited to talk about Julie and Julia, but we got to get a few things out of the way first. And I don't even mean out of the way. I just mean we've got some beautiful segments to whet your appetite for the rest of this show. And so we need to start with a very important question. The question that we ask every week. Somehow this became a segment, but I love it with all my heart. And that question is, Steve, whomst was the Bagger Vance of Under the Tuscan Sun?
Well, I think this one's obvious. I think this movie almost was called Under the Bagger Vance because this character screams Bagger Vance to me. It's coming out of her pores, okay. As far as I'm concerned.
All right.
And that is Catherine, as played by Lindsay Duncan. The old drunk.
Oh, I was like, I don't know what any of those words meant that you just said.
She pops in. She gives advice. She tells her to buy the villa and stay in Tuscany, for gosh sakes.
That's true.
She is, as far as I'm concerned, the Bagger Vance. Now, Adam, whomst do you think was the Bagger Vance?
Well, first of all, Steve, thank you so much for asking. I always appreciate your questions, and this one is no different. For me, the Bagger Vance of Under the Tuscan Sun would have to be the spigot that is on the wall of her Bramasole that really represents, you know, the amount of love flowing into Diane Lane's life at the time. And let me tell you, I'm about halfway through Under the Tuscan Sun, the book. I've been taking a lot of baths, I've been drinking a lot of wine, and it's truly been a transformative experience. My bean is flicked, and I'm ready to take on the world.
Yeah, your skin looks better.
Thank you. Well, I use Dr. Teal's in the bath to get a nice bubble in there, and it just feels nice.
And wine helps your skin.
Exactly, yeah. Seemed nice to just kind of let it play out at the end there.
Mm-hmm. It's a gorgeous track, and I really like that last week I picked an inanimate object of Kansas City, and you picked a character. This time, the roles were reversed. You picked the spigot, and I picked a character. And I feel like we're really narrowing down what we feel is the Bagger Vance of these films.
Absolutely. I picked a spigot, and you picked a person. And that's the song. Let's call it
a spigot. A person.
Yes, we in fact did pick those things. And one day I will truly be a master of what a Bagger Vance is. And I feel like today was a step along that journey.
I feel like we should maybe end every episode with us doing a version of Let's Call the Whole Thing Off. Like, you pick something, I pick something, and then we both sing out to the outro.
Right. You say Julie, and I say Julia. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A duet fit for kings.
Oh, truly. Yeah. A duet that everyone will love every week, and we'll sing our praises for.
I already have to pee. Can you believe it?
I mean, nothing you do surprises me anymore, so no. No, I can believe it.
I'm like the wind. I can pee whenever I want.
I thought you were going to say you're like the Wiz.
Well, no. No, I'm not the Wiz.
I hope not.
You know, I don't. I couldn't. The Wiz?
Not drinking a bone broth this morning.
No. That's only midweek freak treats. I only promised that for the midweek freak treats. I'm drinking coffee this morning, and Zoom!
Is that okay with intermittent fasting? Is coffee okay?
Yes.
Okay.
No calories, no problem.
Hey, beautiful.
Although I had a slice of pumpkin pie this morning, so that probably...
How big of a slice?
It was a very small slice. I'm giving up on the intermittent fasting for
right.
Today, kind of.
Okay, that's fair. You know what? No one expects you to be perfect. Even though we were made in God's image, God doesn't expect us to be perfect. And so it's okay to not go through with intermittent fasting every day. It doesn't mean that you're a failure. It just means that you can try again later. That's all.
You gotta mix it up. You gotta have a balance in your life. It's the yin and the yang.
Exactly. And if there's one thing we understand on this show, it's yang.
And Yin Yang Twins.
Well, you say Yin and I say Yang, you know.
Let's write the whole thing off credits.
Hey, are you ready for everyone's favorite segment of the week?
No!
The Kevin Sorbo Read of the Week.
All right, Kevin Sorbo, I'm going to read your bio again. Just joking.
We loved it so much. We're doing it again.
Yeah, we definitely loved it so much. Okay, so this tweet, I'm assuming, is about the baseball lockout.
Which
has to be.
Very near and dear to your heart. As a man who loves dingers.
It's one of the first things that I've, like, doom-scrolled and, like, refreshed on social media about. And I see now how crazy toxic that is to our society.
Yeah.
But anyways, here's Kevin Sorbo's tweet. It's not about saving lives. It's about control. Period.
You know, and it's funny that he would say that. It's such an insightful view of the MLB lockout.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about control.
Yeah. Well, one of the crux of the lockout right now is creating a draft for international players, because right now they're just filled with steroids and, like, taken from their homes at 13 years old. So they want to institute a little bit of control and save some lives along the way.
Well, no, it's not about saving lives. It's about control.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Who is the thing
I tweeted?
Who is the person who is, like, holding up this MLB lockout? In this MLB lockout minute, let's talk about what the status is and who's really at fault for keeping those ball players off the diamonds.
Well, I would have to say it's definitely Putin a little bit.
Ugh.
But I would have to say both sides. The owners are a bunch of scheming a-hole billionaires. But both sides seem to be really dick-docking the stuff. But that's the thing about social media, is that the people following this think they're important because they have opinions and get it out there. But it doesn't really mean anything because it's about these two groups trying to figure something out, and there's nothing to be said other than that.
It's about billionaires playing with their toys, except their toys are people's lives and enjoyment and, like, a love, a thing that brings people hope and love and enjoyment and entertainment. That's a toy to a billionaire like Mark Cuban. Is Mark Cuban an owner? Is he a baseball owner?
I don't think so. He does basketball, baby.
Oh, that's his thing. Okay, I'm sorry. Just the name Cuban, I thought, well, maybe he's, you know, following his namesake and getting into baseball. Who knows?
Well, he should. I mean, Cuban.
You know, Mark Ichiro over here.
Real quick, I do have to get out that it happened at 1:21 p.m. on March 9th, 2022.
Nice. So that's a post-lunch dump.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the strike and just wishing that he could put on a lunchtime baseball game. But, you know, a nooner, as they would call it.
Yeah, he wants to see a nooner, but he can't, so he dumps.
I get it. I will say, great segment, but also I will say that I'm very excited for us to start attending local baseball games whenever the Haitian snow melts and the season starts, I guess April or May.
I really hope that we can have peanuts at these games, because I want to just cram a bunch of nuts into my face while I'm watching ball.
I'm with you, man. I'd love some peanuts, and you know what? Just for the hell of it, maybe some Cracker Jack.
Yeah. Nah.
I mean, honestly, I don't care if I ever get back.
It's stuck in my teeth, Cracker Jacks. What are Cracker Jacks?
I don't know. I have no idea. Wait, Cracker Jacks, isn't that like popcorn? Like children's popcorn that's pink and it comes in a box, there's a little toy in it? Isn't that Cracker Jacks?
I think it might be flavored or caramel popcorn. I know the pink popcorn was definitely associated with baseball for some reason.
Well, as long as I can get a big floppy wiener and slather some ketchup on it and shove it down my throat, I'll be happy at any baseball game we go to.
I, of course, am a mustard man when it comes to hot dogs.
Fair
and
enough.
We disagree, but we're still able to create this partnership. And, oh, God, I want a sloppy wiener and a beer at a ball game so bad.
I know, man. It's truly great, and it really is America's game. And if we lived in America, we would appreciate it maybe a little bit more. In the meantime, watch Bull Durham or watch some kind of baseball thing. Watch that 10-part documentary about baseball and just, you know, relive America's pastime.
And there's baseball out there, people. There's going to be local teams, local leagues, college baseball. If you want it, get it.
Yeah, don't worry. Baseball isn't going anywhere. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, please stop sending us emails asking us where baseball is going. It's not going anywhere. Please send us as many emails as you want, but stop asking us about baseball. It's always going to be here. Don't worry.
Ask literally anybody else in the world. We know about Christian film.
Yeah.
Cinema.
I think we should change our tagline to a Christian, film podcast. I think that's a better description of what we are. Because you and I are Christian as frick. We're God's favorite podcasters. But we also talk about movies like 2009's Julie and Julia.
Which has a lot of Christian sentiments in it. And I also think that we need to keep Brothers with Benefits in there.
Of course, yeah. I do love that every meal in this movie is prayed over first. That is, I appreciate that they took the time to show everyone praying over every meal before it's served.
Did that happen?
Every single time.
Okay, I missed it. I must have had a Jesus faint.
Right, an angel appeared before you and said, "Be not afraid." And you're like, "All I feel is fear." But
I'm trying to watch this movie, Angel.
Yeah, can you come back in an hour and 43 minutes? We're just getting started.
Yeah. Either appear as Baker Vance or don't appear at all.
Exactly. Oh, imagine if Will Smith appeared in your house. What a treat that would be.
Ghost Will Smith or solid Will Smith?
I mean, you know, either or. Maybe start as a ghost and then become solid, you know?
Oh, so it's like a Star Trek, beam up situation?
Yeah, and it even makes that sound, too.
That was good.
Thanks.
You should do work.
I should do work. Yeah, you're right. All right, let's wrap the show up. I got some work I gotta do.
Yeah, do work.
Do work, son. As a wise man once said, Christopher Big Black Boykin, do work, son.
Rest in peace.
Oh, rest in peace. Oh, my God. The greatest... Honestly, the celebrity death that affected me the most was the death of Christopher Big Black Boykin. And that's not a joke. That's not me being a goof for the show. That is genuine, straight from my fart. Christopher Big Black Boykin is the greatest loss that Hollywood has ever had. Hollyweird, sorry.
Oh, Hollyweird. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. People might disagree. They might say, oh, Amy Winehouse or something. No, no, no. Christopher Big Black Boykin.
Mine's Harris Whittles, but, you know. I'm a comedy nerd.
That's fair. I get it. Oh, how excited were you to see Casey Wilson in this? I almost said Casey Anthony. Casey Wilson in this movie.
I went, oh, Earwolf. She does comedy. Los Angeles.
Oh. Oh, she murdered her daughter. I just totally got away with it. Oh, and I'm thinking of Casey Anthony again. I'm so sorry.
That's a tough mix-up.
It's true. Is it weird to think that a murderer is hot? I don't know. I guess we'll never find out. Okay. All right.
But also no, because, you got a nut.
Right? You can separate the artist from the art. If we can still enjoy Michael Jackson's music, we can agree that Casey Anthony is hot. I think that that's a fair thing to say.
Well, I think you can separate murder from a nut. That's for sure.
I hope so. Yeah. Some people can. Some people can't.
Some people can't. But that's why people love Ted Bundy, because he's so hot.
So hot. Oh, my God. It is funny that there's just, this sexual obsession with serial killers. It's all right, well, gotta flick your bean to something, I guess. And if it's gonna be Ted Bundy, it's gonna be Ted Bundy.
Oh, it's kind of weird, but, hey, man, we're not here to judge, right?
Nah, we're not here to judge. Get Zac Efron to play him in a movie. We're not here to judge.
Speaking of Zac Efron, Nora Ephron.
Mm-hmm. Hey, great segue. Groovy segue, baby. Nora Ephron directing. My first note is Nora Ephron directed, so you know it's good.
Mm-hmm. A film by Nora Ephron. She didn't just, put her paws on this. She filmed it.
Do you want to take another shot at that name?
What did I say?
I think you said, Noral Ephron.
Nah, I'm good.
Norrell Enron directed this movie and also stole so much money from people and did a beautiful job.
I salute you, Norrell Efron.
I salute you, Efron Ramirez, star of Crank and Crank 2.
Pepperoni salami.
That's what he's known for, the Crank movies. So we open in France, which is French for France, in 1949 with, like, the first thing you hear is the dulcet tones of Stanley Tucci's voice, and I'm already in, baby. I'm already hard.
See, this is where I went soft, because A, it's not in Italy. I know it's about French cuisine and everything, but I really wanted Italy to make a showing in this movie.
That's fair, yeah.
The closest we get is that Julie lives atop a pizza place that they don't talk about at all.
They show it several times, though, so you know Mamma Mia is good, you know.
Yeah, but eat the pizza once. I guess this movie is about her making, like, 500 recipes, so you don't want to show them eating from a greasy, crappy New York pizza place.
Not when there's beef bourguignon to eat.
I just thought it was a slap in the face to all pepperoni salamis out there that they didn't show the pizza once.
I agree. I wish they would have at least shown them carrying pizza, eating any in between, like, her cooking. She's cooking, but then in her left hand, she's got a nice slice of za from the pizza place below. You would eat so much pizza if you lived above a pizza place. It would be so easy to just be like, I'm going down for a slice.
Yeah. New York, Mamma Mia, and you're the only apartment on top of this pizza place. You'd think you'd have some kind of relationship, you being into food and all.
Yeah, 900 square feet.
Oh, man. I would dream of 900 square feet in this 400 square foot house.
Oh, oh, you're going to really hate when I tell you how many square feet my loft is that I live in.
I'm guessing 1,300, 1,400?
Try 2,000.
And?
Three zeros afterwards. Nice. Yeah, it's big. It's a big place. You know, I was thinking about it. I was wondering, like, how we chose Under the Tuscan Sun and Julie and Julia, like, how that spun out from Food to Fork to Butt to Mouth to Love. Yeah. And I think I've realized, like, Under the Tuscan Sun was all about, like, the romance and, like, and the love and just, like, you know, just
gush,
right? Whereas this movie is all about the food and also about the love, but mostly about the food. And I think those two halves are what made Farm to Fork to Butt to Mouth to Table to Love such an enjoyable experience. And so we separated those two, and then we got Under the Tuscan Sun and Julie and Julia.
I also feel like both of these movies have been very large in our lives separately. Like, Under the Tuscan Sun, even though I've only seen it once prior in theaters
on a
terrible date.
What?
The title has just rung in my brain.
Yeah, sorry.
For so long.
I was just picturing you on that date, leaning over to the guy next to you, being like, boy, this movie would be better if you're getting topped off, huh?
I didn't talk to anybody ever. Even if the opportunity arose where I could talk about getting topped off mm-hmm. to a guy next to me mm-hmm. with his lovely wife or girlfriend.
Sure. Or boyfriend.
Or, yeah.
Of course, we don't judge. All Stars and Stripes.
Man.
Under the Tuscan Sun has lived rent-free in your head for many years from the sounds of it.
Oh, for sure.
Well, it's a beautiful thing. I saw Julie and Julia probably 4 years ago, and it, like, inspired me to start cooking and also buying Julia Child's stuff. I'm ready to see what I got.
Oh, yeah. It's playtime.
I have
the thing.
Of course, I have Mastering the Art of French Cooking. The
What's
book.
That?
It, nothing.
Where is that from?
France, I guess.
That's an American book. That's an American book.
Oh my god, I got so excited. I opened up the book randomly and I thought I landed on beef bourguignon, but I actually landed on boiled beef, which doesn't seem as good.
It's probably the same, but different.
A beef saute, a Gujon a chevreul, a variation, veal chops or cutlets. What a delight this book is.
I need to know how many pages.
Right, of course. Because the big issue in this movie is that it's like 700 pages long the first time they submit it.
Yeah.
But they did trim it down a scooge. We have, oh damn, they didn't trim it down that much. Looks like here We're looking at... There's a lot of appendices at the back that don't count, so... 684 pages of recipes in this book. Wow. So
they barely cut it down at all, and they stayed true to their original vision, which is, like, a great moment in this film, is that, like, her life's work is going to be seen and heard and loved.
Loved. It did for French cooking in America what The Joy of Cooking did for everyday cooking in America, and it was sold like that.
Yeah, it did what hockey did to Haitians.
Exactly. When you think of Haiti, you think of hockey and Wi-Fi Club Jean, of course.
HH, Hockey Haitians.
Oh, all right, well, easy on the HH there, pal. As well, I also have the delightful My Life in France by Julia Child, the book that this movie is kind of, like, the Julia Child stuff in this movie is taken from this book, My Life in France. Truly a wonderful book, a great book to read lying on a lounger out in the sun on your deck, and just a beautiful love story, and I'm saying all this genuinely. I really love this book, My Life in France. It's really good.
It's like it a beautiful story. It sounds good. I think I would like a read of that.
Well, buy your own.
Have you done any of the recipes from the original book?
No, I'm very intimidated by it because it's like intense cooking and I just don't feel like I'm a good enough chef. But hey, right now I'm much like a Julie Powell in that I don't feel like I'm a good enough chef, but maybe I just need to start cooking and then I will become a good chef.
Did you hear the Italian lilt in your voice when you said that? I'm not gonna be a good chef. It definitely rolled off very racist Italian-y.
Pepperoni salami lives within me now, and it's always gonna be a part of me.
I thought about Italy way too much during the watch of this movie.
But France in 1949 seems like a magical place. You just, you buy fish from the fishmonger. You buy bread from the breadmonger. It's great.
And war is over.
Peace and love.
The Americans saved you. I don't know. It's probably a great time to be in France.
Truly. Oh, the city of love.
Yeah, the country of love.
I guess. Sure. Why not?
Why not, indeed?
A minute and 39 seconds is all it takes for this movie to show its first dish, which is a fish cooked in butter, and oh, it looks delish.
This really sparked something in me, because I went to a very fancy restaurant in London, and it really did choke me up when I had a few of these dishes, and how much, like, flavor was just, like, forced, crammed into these dishes, and how, like, amazing it all was. And I really felt what Julia Child was feeling in that moment, I think.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, her very lovely husband, Stanley Tucci, is there to be right along with her and provide her with anything she needs at any time.
They're so in love, and that's one of the charmingest parts of this movie, is how in love and how much they frick. They frick all the time in this movie. It's a frick fest.
Well, definitely in the first third of this movie, it's mostly, like, both couples are shown as just being on top of each other. They want to frick all the time. There's lunch fricking. There's evening fricking. I don't see any morning fricking, which is when I like to frick. But so I was saddened by that.
Right. You expected, like, that, because there's several shots of an alarm clock going off. You expected a hand to hit that and then, like, just the sound.
A hand to hit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted some cock-a-doodle-doo, and then I'm in ya, you know?
Oh, for real. I know, yeah. Well, we do get this great line. Can we get to the best line in the movie, or should we save that?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the best line, she, Julia Child is cooking cannolis, and she fishes them out of the pot with her bare hands and goes, "Oh, these damn things are as hot as a stiff cock," which is very funny.
Yeah, and Julie's talking to her husband, a very pepperoni salami man himself, and they're like, "Oh my god, she was such a curious knave when it comes to the bedroom.
She was so randy, baby."
you doing an impression of Julia Child really makes me think that a lot of Mrs. Doubtfire was based on Julia Child.
Yeah, for real. Actually, now that you point that out, I'd say that Mrs. Doubtfire is just Julia Child's if she was a nanny and not a cook or not a chef. Absolutely.
Yeah, and British.
Yeah, she's not British. That's true. She's from like Oklahoma or something like that, wherever.
But it seems like new Oklahoma because there's a very specific tone to her voice that seems like it's of Britain.
Well, and she's an international woman of mystery. So she's living abroad most of her life.
Stanley Tucci works for the government. She used to too, and they work at the embassy in France.
Yes.
Paris, France.
He works at the embassy. Oh, no, I guess she does too. Yeah, yeah. But she's just bored. She just doesn't have anything to do. She's looking for something to spice up her life, as the Spice Girls would say. And tries hat making. Not for her. Tries,
gross.
Tries bridge. Not for her.
No.
No. Maybe she should have tried rook. I don't know. Christians love that stuff.
Have you ever done bridge?
I've eaten a lot of bridge mixture, but I've never played bridge myself.
Yeah, me either.
It's too much. Too many cards, too many countings, no thanks.
Bids,
Right?
I don't know anymore.
I'm a simple man. I like roulette. You know, I'm a simple man.
Cribbage.
Cribbage, of course.
Yeah, just not for her.
Not for her. And it's not until she realizes that she loves food and her and the teacher talking, she's like, I should learn how to cook. And he said, well, you should go learn how to cook, brah. I love it. So she does.
And she's very unsure of herself. She knows she loves eating, but she hasn't made that step. She's in her 40s, I believe, at this point in her life.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's already lived a life, and she knows she's passionate. She wants a career. She wants to sink her teeth into something.
I think she just wants something to do.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, I don't even know if she was looking to turn it into a career. I think it was more just like, I want to learn how to cook and be really good at it, because I love French cooking, which, understandably, you look at Italian cooking. You watch Stanley Tucci Searching for Italy, and Italian cooking is often very simple ingredients. You know, you just tomato, pasta, cheese. That's all, maybe a little olive oil, and that's all you need to make a delicious Italian dish. But for French cooking, oh, the accoutrements you need, oh, the amuse-bouche, so much.
And butter. And lots and lots of gooey, gooey butter. The reason I bring up the career thing is that later on she does say she's been searching for a career her whole life.
Oh, okay.
And feels like she's found it. And that really, like, rang true for me. I really connected with her on that.
Well, you are a classically trained French chef, so of course it would.
Yeah, and I got big old gams.
Yeah. Hot. Never mind.
Hot, yeah, hot gams.
Yeah, yeah, hot gams. Yeah, yeah. Legs that go all the way up. Yeah, for sure.
That's why you were behind me on the conveyor belt when we went tubing, right? Because you wanted to take a look at my gams.
Well, you had your flannels on? No, what were you calling it?
I got my flannels on.
No, it wasn't flannels.
No, thermals.
Thermals, yeah. I got some of the letters.
I had to sing it.
Of course. I had to sing it to realize it was wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, Amy Adams is in this. She's making a delicious bruschetta. I'm very excited to see that. That's a little bit of Mamma Mia right there. Delicious looking bruschetta. And that's when her husband goes like, maybe you should write a blog about cooking or something. And she goes, yeah, all right.
She has a very mind-numbing, terrible job listening to people complain about 9/11 all day.
Yeah, this movie... So it takes place in 1949 with Julia Child, and also 2002 with Julie Powell, fresh off the big sensational 9/11 that happened, and just rocked the world, took the world by storm, you could say.
So they moved to this place in Queens, so they could be closer to her husband's job, but she has to slough it all the way to downtown New York on the train, and then. To get to her job where she just gets crapped on all day on the phone.
And
I've been there too.
And she has to walk past the site where 9/11 happened. Every day she's got to look at 9/11 and go, well, there it is. I'll never forget it because I see it every friggin' day.
That's a bright spot for her, though.
Oh, of course. She loves it. It gives her hope.
Yeah, hole in the ground? Ooh, wee. Gets her a horny.
We wouldn't know anything about a hole in the ground, that's for sure.
Geologist.
Oh, of course, yeah. The modern day stuff is in this movie, but the French stuff is très bien, which means good, I think. Very good, maybe.
I like the, like, as a film thing.
Sure.
I can't as a film. A better word. Yeah. But it's nice seeing both sides and how they intermingle, and as a director, I feel like this would be great. But I could have been like you. I could have seen either movie and probably been better off.
Well, I don't think a movie about a blogger would have been very good. I don't think that movie would have been as interesting as a movie about Julia Child in France. I'd feel like Julie Powell as a, like, the movie is just her cooking and blogging. That's the only adventure she has, is cooking and blogging in 9/11.
And fricking,
but then less fricking.
Yeah, well, the fricking just goes downhill throughout this movie. Well, I mean, problems arise, and you got to overcome these problems, and it has to follow the film formula.
Of course.
But they should have just kept fricking.
Yeah, yeah. There should have been, like, a time fricking where, like, they partner swapped and fricked each other's partners across time and space.
like a lake house situation? I don't know if they cross time and space to frick or not, but I'm assuming they do.
I probably.
Yeah.
I don't know what the lake house is. Oh, is that Keanu Reeves movie?
Yeah, with the lady from Speed.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Back together again.
Yeah.
The man from Speed and the lady from Speed.
Yeah, to frick over time.
Of course. Well, hey, that's ain't that the truth? Aren't we all just trying to frick over time? Get our frick numbers up, you know?
Very true.
Oh, but yeah.
Julie is very lost in life, but she's an amazing cook. She uses cooking to relax at the end of the day and to get away from her life's worries.
Because no matter what, if she combines ingredients and follows a recipe, it creates a thing.
Yes.
And oftentimes that thing is good.
Yes. Very often that thing is good. Like, if you mix eggs and chocolate, it's gonna get hard.
Oh yeah, I did love that her, like, she was making that dessert at the start, and her husband comes in and goes like, hey, I was just watching this movie called Chocolate Cream Pie, what are you making? And she was like, oh, it's called Chocolate Cream Pie. And he's like, oh, what a coincidence, we were watching the same thing.
I would have loved to be her husband in this movie, because basically every scene is him just like gorging on her cooking and like shuffling around like a Don Juan and getting fricked all the time. Mm-hmm. It must have been an actor's dream.
Oh yeah, you get to hang out with Amy Adams, who just seems like a delight. You get to eat like a lot of times in movies, they're not allowed, they don't eat the food, right? They'll chew it and spit it out because they got to do a lot of takes. But I bet in this movie they ate a lot of food. I bet they were like, ah, screw it, we're just gonna eat this beef bourguignon.
Except for maybe that bruschetta scene where he's just like eating it like a duck. I would have to assume he had to do a couple of takes of that where there's a couple of spits. Because that was deep. Deep love for that bruschetta.
I mean, he, you know, you say he's eating like a duck. I say he's eating like a deboned duck.
That's the biggest crux for Julie, I guess, is getting to the deboned duck. And it just works out perfectly.
Yeah, it's the thing where, like, it's seen as like kind of the climax of the movie, where she's like, and now I have to debone this duck. But like, leading up to it, I guess it's mentioned in passing a couple of times, but it's not. It doesn't really seem like that big of a deal. More like her obsession with Julia Child, and if Julia Child knows about her, seems to be more of the crux of the movie. And then we get closure on that, and then it's like, oh yeah, crap, she got to debone that duck. Oh well.
Yeah, they have to create stakes for Julie. And it should have been 9/11.
Right? It should have been her trying to cook this food while 9/11 is happening around her. And she's writing in her blog like, hey guys, 9/11 just happened, but I made a beautiful souffle today.
This is my last recipe and I need to get it done, but 9/11 just happened and I can't get my ingredients.
I can't see through all the tears. I'm trying to debone this duck and I can't stop crying.
The ash is getting into my duck.
Oh no, my duck! That's the way she goes. That duck did look very good, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, the food in this movie is absolutely tremendous. They must have spent so much money of their budget on this food.
For real, absolutely. Yeah, because it's not like they're just going downstairs to the pizza place every night. They're cooking fancy meals, and they gotta make them. Someone's gotta make them.
Well, yeah, and this gets us to Julie's quest, her dream of completing all of Julia Child's recipes in her masterpiece book in a calendar year and blogging every day about it.
Yeah, it's 520 some recipes over 365 days, which right away I'd go, well, that seems like, I mean,
too much.
Yeah, why didn't you go, well, maybe we'll do a year and a half? Like, why don't we just do one a day? Why am I doing, like, some days I'm gonna have to do like three recipes? That's crazy. I don't want to have to do that.
I don't know. Like, the blogging at this time, you needed to have a big idea and a big deadline to catch readers' attention.
Mm-hmm.
She's a bit of a writer. She has writer friends, a bunch of like terrible, crappy, rich female
Casey
friends.
Casey Wilson. The girl from Death Proof.
Yeah. And she plays it beautifully.
Oh,
she plays it like a horse-haired violin.
Oh, the finest of violins. If your violin isn't made with horsehair, throw it out.
I thought we were going to see more of those terrible friends, but there's just kind of one scene of Cobb salad lunch with them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. Yeah. But then, like, she gets, like, better friends, I guess, is, like, the implication, because suddenly people are coming for dinner, and they're really nice, and they're, like, good people, and we're never introduced to them. We don't know who they are, but they seem new. Like, they seem like they're just, like, in their life now, so.
I have to assume the Cobb salad friends are, like, college friends that were all rich and all became successful. Maybe a sorority-type situation.
Sure.
And then her other friends are, like, her actual friends from work and high school and love and life and...
Right, live, laugh, love. Exactly, yeah. Well, it certainly sounds like the Cobb salad lunch is an obligation.
Oh, yeah.
And not a thing she wants to go to, which, understandably, her friends are so disconnected.
Yeah, they drag her.
They drag her. And they all love Cobb salad, but they all love it without certain ingredients. And they go, well, then don't get a Cobb salad. Get a different salad, then.
Get anything else. I'm sure this place has a million salads or steak. That will wring your nuts off.
Yeah, and everyone hates you here because you all order Cobb salad and you all order it differently. And now the waiter's got to be like, are you the one who didn't want eggs or are you the one who didn't want bacon? Which Cobb salad do you want? Just put them down, sort it out yourselves.
Spoiler alert, Julie is the one that does not like eggs.
Right, she's never eaten an egg in her life.
Yeah. Well, she doesn't not like them is that she, like, has an opinion about them and has never had one in a long time.
Never had. I mean, she's had them in things. She's had them in, you know, like in a cake or something like that, but she's never eaten an egg. Eat an organic egg, she says. And one of the first things she does is, what is it? Poach an egg.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay. I guess that's the first. Okay, well, fine. Poach it then, I guess.
It seemed like a weird place to start with an egg.
Yeah.
It also seemed like a very positive reaction, like, immediately.
Yeah. Like, she eats and goes like, oh, this is so good. I'm like, a poached egg? Like, that's it? Just a poached egg with maybe some salt on it? Hey, caramba. I don't know, lady.
She equates it to, like, a cheese sauce or something like that. And it's just weird. Like, eggs are weird if you haven't had them your entire life. Like, if I didn't have eggs when I was a kid, I don't know if I'd have them now. They're a little weird, slimy, like,
yeah,
kind of different.
They're not good either. Like, they're not good on their... I mean, they're good in some ways, but, like, every time you eat an egg, you're just kind of like, well, I've made it, so I'm going to eat it. But, like, people who eat boiled eggs, I go, like, what do you get out of that? Like, it's just chalky mush that you're eating. I don't understand.
Protein, baby.
Oh, it's the protein.
I do genuinely like a boiled egg with some salt on it. I think it tastes really good.
Pickled
and
eggs?
And, like, a cheese sauce.
Whoa, it tastes just like a cheese sauce. I go, I feel like you've never eaten cheese sauce in your life, Amy Adams.
Which is weird because you made a really good bruschetta.
Oh, bruschetta. Oh, mamma mia. Give me some pizza. Put some cheese sauce on it.
Man, I think I'm going to go get some toast and make an avocado toast with egg on it. Oh, God, is that good.
Do you ever have egg in the hole?
Yes.
Oh.
I'm a big egg in the hole man.
Me too.
I think that's actually what I called it when I was a kid. Maybe it was egg in a nest.
Yeah. My wife, I never had it before, and then my wife, she used to eat it all the time, and now she bakes sourdough bread, and she'll make egg in the hole for us, and it's very good.
I've never had it with sourdough. That sounds really good.
Buenos Aires is delicious.
I'm very much looking forward to it, and if you're sitting there and you're like, why are they talking about food for 20 minutes here? It's because this is food. This is movie food.
Movie food. Food is life. Food is sex. That's what food is. It's everything. Hey, here's a tip about food. If you don't,
it's sex.
If you don't dry your meat, then it won't brown properly. Make sure to dry your meat, and then it browns the correct way.
It's a tip I've kind of glommed onto because of these mail order meal kits.
Sure.
They always say to, you know, dry your meat. Yeah. And I didn't really know why. They don't tell you because it helps it brown better in the kit. But this movie really nailed down some techniques for me.
Oh, yeah. And hey, when you are using a knife, a big butcher's knife, let's say, make sure that your last three fingers are the ones gripping the knife or the handle, and then your thumb and your pointer finger are holding onto the blade. So then so that the knife is an extension of your hand and your arm and your wrist and all of that. And honestly, first time I watched this movie, I took that tip into the kitchen, and it is a great tip. It's a very good tip, and it really changes the way you handle and use a knife. So thank you, Julie and Julia.
Yeah, Julia gets this tip when she's chopping onions on her first day of chef school at Le Cordon Bleu.
Oh, one of the finest, maybe at the time, and maybe still, the pinnacle of French cooking schools.
Yeah, and it's not like now when any, like, skirt can just go into a school
and
learn things professionally. This was a man's world.
And she was butting her way in there. She was determined to be the best. So she chops a mountain of onions. She whisks that whatever the hell it is so
cream?
Much. It's like, I can't remember what it's called. Meringue. She whips that meringue so much, speaking of eggs, that it gets nice stiff peaks on it. And, she's just the best.
Not to mention that would pay dividends in bed, I would have to assume.
Whisking? Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Who doesn't love a good whisking in bed?
Not chopping onions. That doesn't play.
No.
I don't want my undercarriage chopped.
I do love that when she's chopping onions at home and Stanley Tucci walks in, he's just like crying because of all, and she's crying because she's upset, but it's also from the onions. And he's like, all right, I'm leaving. She's like, are you hungry? He's like, no, get me. I want to get out of the kitchen.
That was one of my favorite scenes of the two of them because it was very real and very like actual marriage conversation. Like you walk in and you just like, are hit with a wall of whatever, and you're like, nah, I'm just leaving.
Yeah.
I'm done.
You're doing your thing. I'm going to go somewhere else and do my thing. Yeah.
Nobody's upset. Nothing has to happen. Nobody has to get mad, but like, life is happening.
Sometimes you just got to go whisk yourself off in another room, you know?
True.
Get a stiff
peak.
And
I do want to get whisked off.
Oh, I need to get my peaks nice and stiff, you know?
Very, very much.
Oh, yeah. So Julie starts cooking. She starts cooking and blogging, and it's going well. She murders three lobsters by boiling them alive. What a monster. Stab them in the head. That's what Julia Child says to do, but she's too much of a coward to look a lobster in the eye and take its life. Instead, she slowly kills them slowly in boiling water. Cruel. It's cruel.
It's very cruel. And then, the lid pops off. Once she decides to murder and decides to kill these lobsters, and very successfully, but then the lid pops off, and then the husband comes in and puts the lid back on, and he's a hero.
He's a hero. He's the murderer. Yeah.
So he's the murderer.
Yeah. They also play Psycho Killer by the Talking Heads during that scene, and it's a very funny juxtaposition.
And he's singing it as well. It's fun.
It's fun. You know, it's just fun. And that's one thing I'd say about this movie is it's just fun and delightful and heartwarming. It's just a beautiful love story about people who love each other very much and the love of cooking.
Is it weird that both husbands are decidedly Italian?
No, it just makes sense. I mean, Stanley Tucci is Italian on both sides.
Yeah,
and
both
and
ends.
Eric is Italian where it counts, I guess. Bloodlust.
His name Eric?
His name's Eric, yeah.
Ooh, what a crappy name.
Well, I
should have been
his name might not have been Eric in the movie, but his name is Eric in real life. I did some research on Julie Powell. I wanted to see what else she's written. This is her first book and first of two books, because her second book that came out was universally hated from the looks of it. And it also soured everyone on Julie Powell. People don't like her anymore from the looks of it. Because the second book is all about her having an affair and then learning how to be a butcher. And then it just turns into Eat, Pray, Love. And it's her just being like, yeah, I love rough sex and I love having affairs. Like, people were just like, what is this? We don't want this. We're not interested in this. This is a poorly written book. So, you know, just sounds like it was trashed.
Well, she wanted to get on the 50 Shades of Grey train. And but combine it with food, probably.
The 50 Shades of Gravy train, you know?
Yeah, that sounds perfect. That sounds good.
It does sound good. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
The actor's name is Chris Messina, famously from the Mindy Project, is where I know him from.
Well, you say famously, I say unfamously. Let's call the whole thing off, yeah? Well, there, we found it for the end of the show.
What was your favorite dish of this show?
Oh, Mamma Mia, that's tough. I mean, the one I've wanted to make since I saw them make it is the beef bourguignon. It looks so delicious. It's just like a fancy, rich beef stew made with sherry, I think is what she is pouring into it. And like
Port,
that's what it is, yeah. And like carrots and onion. It's just a fancy French beef stew. But just big old chunks of beef, and it looks delicious. I'm going to have to get lunch after this.
From personal experience, the Irish really know how to make a beef stew, and the French stews I've had have kind of come up flat. I'm sure, like, if a real chef made it for me, I'd change my mind. But that's my life up until now.
Well, it's maybe not... Maybe a stew isn't the right... Like, it's not like a soupy stew. It's like... Yep. Stewed beef, essentially, I think is a better way to put it. It's not like you're eating like a big hearty stew. You're eating beef that's been stewed and then you enjoy it like that.
Well, when you say it like that, oh, stewed.
Yeah,
I think the one I most connect with is that fish right up at the beginning.
Oh, where they debone it and they just pull that skeleton right out of it. Oh.
And her reaction of it was just like, oh my God, I want to have that fish.
I don't blame her, because it's cooked with butter. And as a margarine man growing up, as soon as I had butter, I was like, what? My parents hated us, apparently, because we ate margarine all the time. And that crap is crap. And then you eat butter and you go, oh, it's the nectar of the gods. It's delicioso.
Well, margarine is just whipped oil. So you're just eating a bunch of oil all over the place.
Disgusting. Oil is delicious. Well, it's like canola oil, probably. So gross. Oh, yeah. No thanks. Well, yuck. Yuck. No thanks.
That's good podcasting, though.
Oh, yeah. That fish did look delish. I will say that. Yeah. I mean, honestly, my favorite dish might have just been the mountain of onions that she had.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that was our scene of the day.
Hey, this is the Pure Boys Podcast scene of the day.
Onions!
I can tell you what my favorite segment of the film is.
What's that?
Well, that would be when Jane Lynch arrives playing Julia's sister, Dorothy, and she arrives in France, and they just have a wonderful time together. That is my favorite chunk of the movie, because those two have great chemistry as Julia and Dorothy, and it's very fun watching them bounce off each other.
They do have a lot of fun together. They're both tall, larger-than-life personalities. And I did enjoy this part of the movie, but I felt like story-wise it could have been cut out and like it wouldn't have changed the movie whatsoever.
No, wouldn't have changed anything. It does nothing to contribute to the flow of the movie. It's just a lovely little sojourn off the beaten path, just this fun little segment of the movie. And you get to see Jane Lynch with what looks like a pillow taped around her, so classic fat suit. We love it.
And she gets pregnant, and Julia Child doesn't get pregnant, but steals her baby.
Right. The great irony of someone named Julia Child not having a child.
Oh my God. Isn't that just heartbreaking?
Oh, it truly is. She, I wonder how many times she pointed that out to her loving husband, Paul, played by Stanley Tucci.
Get your dick fixed.
Yeah, it was his fault, sure.
Well, they didn't know. 1949, they didn't know how to count semen yet.
No, you're right. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It was
motility.
They had to they had to taste it to see if it was still good.
Oh, lemony.
Oh, yuck.
It was probably all that smoking and wine they were consuming.
It is funny watching them just like seeing them cook, and it starts with just like three, like a brick of butter thrown into a pan, and she's got a dart in her hand and a glass of wine, and I'm just like, this chick's living large, on like high on the hog, and just a rich lifestyle, you know?
Yeah, certainly their last 10 years of their life were probably hell on earth because of all the coughing and the lungs and whatever, but while they were living, they were living.
They both lived to be in their 90s, though.
Yeah.
So?
He was 92, she was 91.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Maybe there's something to it.
Yeah. Well, let's get a smoking, let's get a whining. I think it's all just random effects anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I drink wine and eat butter all the time, and I feel like I'm in terrible shape, and my heart is constantly beating funny, and I'm worried about it, legitimately. So, I don't know.
Maybe it's more sex. You need to combine the cigarettes and the wine with the sex.
Yeah, I've got to get that cardio in. That makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I need more tea. I need more testosterone, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. You do need more tea.
Thank you.
You're a soft man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I love you. So, I don't know. Other stuff happens with the blog. Just stuff happens. It's fine. She has meltdowns. It affects her marriage because she's becoming a narcissist. Because she's the center of the universe. And her husband feels neglected, which understandably. And then as you find out more about Julie Powell, the real person, you go, yeah, you sound like you're kind of a narcissist. I don't know. It sounds like you were neglecting your husband. I don't know.
Well, she asks her friend if she's an asshole. And her friend agrees that she's an asshole.
Yeah.
And then they talk a little bit more. And she's like, am I really an asshole? And then her friend agrees again, and that's when we learn that she's an asshole.
And she keeps asking, and her friend keeps saying, yes, you are, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. You have your ringtone is that I'm an asshole song. So yeah, I would say that's who you are. I was trying to think of who sang it, but I could only think of Dennis Miller, but it's not Dennis Miller, it's somebody else.
Kevin Miller?
No, I don't think it's Miller anything. It's a guy who's like, when I think of Dennis Miller, I think, oh, Dennis Miller and this other guy are two comedians that I don't enjoy. So,
like, he had a bunch of, like, a fireman show.
Yeah, yeah. Burn? No.
Burn?
Hey, this is good podcasting.
Kevin McAllister was a terrible man.
Uh-huh.
He ruined our lives.
And he's a big asshole, I gotta say.
What is his name? I see you looking it up right now, yeah. And I don't. Can you just mouth it to me?
I was close. I was very close.
Yeah, I know.
His name is. Did that help? I melted to you. Did it help?
Yeah, you melted to me, and I forgot that I asked you to do that. And I was very confused, and it seems like I'm on edibles right now, but I'm not. I'm so lucid, it's making me erm.
Well, I'll tell you this. I got half the name right. Can you guess which
Kevin
half?
James.
No. I said Dennis Miller, but it's not Dennis Miller, but it's someone close to that. Half that name is correct.
It's got to be Keith Miller.
It's Keith Miller. Yep, correct. Famous asshole Keith Miller. No, it's Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary. I was really stuck on Miller.
I know. I was trying to lead you away from that, but you were really stuck on Miller. You thought it was Sienna Miller. I was like, it's not Sienna Miller. I don't know who it is. Miller's Crossing. And the rest.
Good art.
Paul, aka Stanley Tucci, gets investigated by the US government for being a communist.
Yeah.
And all I could think was, what a stupid time to be alive that must have been, when it was like, my neighbor's a communist. It's like, all right, calm down, everyone.
They ask him if he's gay, and he laughs and says no.
Very
and
gaily.
They're like, well, this is not a laughing matter. And it is, because you're being a total dweeb.
Well, this is also 1953 or something like that, yeah. Which, like, gets stoned in the street for being gay. And it's maybe it was worse to be gay than being a communist. I don't know back then.
It's probably the same. They probably saw it as, like, very, very equal terribleness.
That's a very good... Well, that's why they ask it, you know? Say in the same breath.
They both have to have a problem before the end of this movie. Julia's is that she's trying to get her work out there. She's fighting with her co-authors. Are her co-authors on that book still?
Oh, yeah. No, Simone and Louisette. Yeah, Louisette and Louisette Bertholli and Simone Beck. And even though Louisette didn't really contribute a whole lot to this book, Julia Child goes to bat for her and insists that they also be put on the cover. It's funny that she says, like, all of our names should be the same size, but on the version of the book I have, Julia Child's name is, like, five times as big as the other two. So, who came out on top? I don't know.
Well, I'm guessing it's the person that got on American TV and ingratiated a nation. Is that a... Is that a term?
Ingratiated a nation. Yes, I believe so. We also cool. have Max Bugnard, who is the chef that taught her how to cook at Le Cordon Bleu.
He seemed like a good guy. He only got like two lines, and they were trying to like relate that he did good job.
Yeah, he doesn't. But, he doesn't judge her for being a woman. He just accepts that she's a woman and she wants to cook, so he helps her be a great cook. He's a good dude, and it goes into. There's more of that in My Life in France, and he's like pretty big in a certain part here. Hey, look at that, chapter two, Le Cordon Bleu, and he's great in this book. So.
Beautiful. But I'm glad to hear.
Her book keeps getting rejected by publishers because it's too long, it's too complicated, until eventually they find the right publisher. Nomf, however you pronounce it. Nomf?
Mein Kampf?
All right, easy, HH. Calm down over there.
I'm an agent of chaos.
This guy needs to take edibles in the morning or else he starts.
Yeah, remember when I said F you to everyone?
Yeah, man, you had swastikas in your eyes when you said that. It was intense.
Oh, don't say that.
Not the Hindu kind.
I would never put in my swastika contact for this record.
You do have the eye of the villain from Last Action Hero, where you blink certain time ways and a different eye shows up.
It's for Halloween, I swear to Christ.
Hey, the big bombshell for Julie, though, is that Julia Child, some jabroni gets a quote from Julia Child about this blog, and her response is basically, I hate this blog, and I hate Julie Powell. I hate it. I hate it. It's trash. It's all trash.
This really soured my milk.
See, I had already done the research on Julie Powell, and I already disliked her. So to hear Julia Child go, yeah, I don't like her, I went, well, I get it. Like, I'm with you, Julia. I agree.
So does Julie come off as, like, exploitative a little bit? Like, she was just doing this to be write a blog and to get a book deal and wasn't really into the cooking?
It's hard.
Is that why Julia Child hated her?
Well, the way Julia Child phrases it is that she says that, like, she doesn't seem like a serious cook and that she's only doing this as a stunt. And I can't speak for Julie Powell's, like, motivations or anything like that. But reading about her next book, Cleaving, which is about her, like, being a horrible person and, like, just being a terrible person in her life and to her husband, I go, well, maybe you are kind of a narcissist, piece of trash person. I don't know. Hard to say. I can't speak for her, but just my impression of her, based on what I've read, is not a very positive one, and I have to side with dead Julia Child here on this one.
Me too. I mean, all you really had to say was cleaving. That's, no, well, thanks.
It's all about her becoming a butcher. She wants to learn how to be a butcher.
No, she's an opportunistic blogger who just wanted to get her name out there.
If you want a good time, read the Goodreads reviews for Julie Powell's Cleaving. It is merciless. The way people talk about her is merciless in those long, multi-paragraph reviews, just dragging her through the mud. It's pretty funny.
That's real fun.
It's real
fun, though. That really turns me around on this movie. Which way? We'll find out.
We'll find out. Yes, one day. I mean, oh, there's a great shot where she sends the manuscript. Julia sends the manuscript to this publisher. And so the publisher is reading it. The publisher who ends up publishing them. She starts reading it at home. She's cooking. And there's a shot of the beef bourguignon recipe. And some, like, port splashes on it. And and I thought that was very... There's something about that shot that I just went like, oh, that's like, that's cooking right there. Just getting your recipe dirty because you just, it's right next to the kitchen. You're making a mess. You're cracking a few eggs. You know, it's a messy process.
Yeah. They really highlight through that throughout this movie is that Julia Child just loved being in the kitchen and didn't give a darn if something fell on the counter or like something was a little messy. It's more about like, producing food at the end of it and producing good food and not being like clean and perfect all the time.
Yeah. And if you know, here's one last piece of cooking advice for everyone out there. Never apologize for your cooking. You've made this thing, you poured your heart and soul into it. If it turns out or it doesn't turn out, you still did it. And you shouldn't apologize if something doesn't turn out exactly the way you want it to. And never apologize to the people you're serving it to, because they don't know what you went through, and they don't know if it's how it's supposed to be. So if it's, you know, if you missed something or you burnt this thing or you did whatever, they don't know that. So just let them enjoy the food, and you know the food is communal, so enjoy it together. It's an experience.
And it really translates to life. If you're doing something out of love and you're not hurting anyone, don't apologize for it. Live your truth.
Live your truth, all right? And if you got a co-host that's constantly saying HH and just being a real certain type of person, you just got to love them anyway. And that's how I feel about you.
HH?
Nope, you said it, not me.
I don't know what that even means anymore.
Look, it's time to debone that duck, all right? It's just...
I love it!
Oh, man. Crashed my car into a bridge, you know? One last note about this movie and just Julia Child in general. I love Julia Child's kitchen. I wish, like, I see her kitchen and I go, that's the kitchen I want. I want pots hung on the wall. I want a big butcher's block cutting area where I can debone a duck. I want a nice stove with, it's a bunch of assorted pots and pans on it. And I want an island where I can prep things and stuff hanging from garlic and stuff hanging from the ceiling. It's just, it's magical to see a kitchen like that.
It really reminds me of the 80s and cooking shows that I would watch when I was a young kid on the CBC. There was a man who used to have a cooking show.
Yeah, you're talking about The Urban Peasant.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
I love The Urban Peasant. I'm with you. Yeah, yeah.
I watched a lot of his shows me when too. I was a kid. It was always on, and it was always something okay to watch. And I really like the set pieces and the vision of this movie a lot.
The Urban Peasant owes his career to Julia Child, who had like maybe the first cooking show on television. So
yeah,
there you go.
Really normalized it.
Yeah, really normalized cooking for sure.
Boo.
Boo, we hate it. I mean, is there anything else we need to say about this movie? I loved it. I feel like you enjoyed it.
It was all right. I was in a really terrible mood, and I knew it was, like, informing how I felt about this movie, which made me more upset because it was a delightful movie in most respects, and that just snowballed into kind of a little bit of loathing. But I still hate Stanley Tucci. I don't know why. I did a little bit of a deep dive on his IMDb because there is something wrong with me. Uh-huh. I talked to my wife about this, and she loves Stanley Tucci as well. So I did a deep dive, and I think he was a bad guy in the Beethoven movies, or the first Beethoven movie. And I think that's why I still... 'cause like, he doesn't have to say or do anything, and I still just kind of hate him.
Are you telling me that Stanley Tucci and Charles Grodin were in a movie together? Beethoven? Oh, yeah.
Very much so.
Wow.
And David Duchovny's in that movie as well.
Really?
I think he's one of the bad guys as well.
Damn, I'm going to have to watch Beethoven. Is Stanley Tucci the one who gets all the needles in his back at the end? Because that's a haunting image that has stayed with me my entire life.
Honestly, that's flooding back into my memory, and I don't like it. I don't want that image in my head. I haven't seen Beethoven as an adult or even a small adult. So I couldn't say what the movie is about or what happens in it.
How little of a niño were you the last time you watched it?
Probably when it came out, so like 5 or something.
Damn, that's six. A little niña, yeah. We had Beethoven Second on VHS, and I watched that one a lot. And that one is fine. You know, there's more Beethovens in it, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, more Beethovens.
Yeah, exactly. We're all over Beethoven, you know?
But yeah, I still hate Stanley Tucci. I still hate Pierce Brosnan because of Mrs. Doubtfire. This has really stuck with me my entire life, so I'm guessing it was Beethoven.
Your hatred of Pierce Brosnan because of Mrs. Doubtfire doesn't make any sense. Robin Williams is the villain of Mrs. Doubtfire. Pierce Brosnan is a saint in that movie.
I agree, but Robin Williams was my hero at this time, and I just loved that part of the story, and I saw Pierce Brosnan as like the most evil person in the world when I was a kid because of Mrs. Doubtfire. He was trying to split up that family. Oh my god.
He wasn't trying to split up the family. Robin Williams has already split up the family. He was trying to start a new family with this. He was trying to heal the family.
I agree now, but as far as my little Nina brain was comprehending it, and it stuck with me.
Do you want to hear my impression of Mrs. Doubtfire? And no, it's not hello.
Okay,
it goes like this. It goes, oh, your Mercedes. That's my impression of Mrs. Doubtfire. It's not bad.
What did you think of this movie? Honestly.
Bro,
give me the honest opinion.
Bro, you know I love this movie. Yeah, I love it. Even though it's a very conflicted thing because it's 2 hours long and you could cut it down to an hour and a half if you cut out all the Amy Adams stuff. If you just call it Julia, it's a way better movie. But even with that being said, even with all the crappy Julie stuff, the Julia Child stuff is so good that it elevates the rest of it, and it really makes me love this movie, despite what I would call shortcomings in the Julie Powell section. So, 10 out of 10, and that's completely due to Meryl Streep as Julia Child and Stanley Tucci as Paul Child.
I give this one a solid 7 out of 10.
Well, that's the wrong score, but that's fine. listeners, check out Julie and Julia. I think it's on Netflix. It's a beautiful movie, and you're gonna love it. And yay, get cooking, all right? Do something good for yourself. Learn how to cook. Cook more, and cook with the ones you love.
Cook with love.
Exactly. And speaking of which, I love you.
I love you.
We love you.
And
The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
Hold up.
It's Pure Boys.
Yeah, I got two throats.
The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
Hold up.
It's Pure Boys.
Say what?